From UBN, the United Broadcasting Network, it's the Jerry Hughes Show. So just exactly what do women want? Well, they want a romantic evening with Slick Willie, of course. And just to what do women think about, or what do they think? Well, they think about a romantic evening with Slick Willie. Not really. What do women want, and what do they think? And what's the woman's point of view on something like abortion, or affirmative action, or war? Well, we're going to find out. We have two young ladies who are with us who have put together one of the most informative, one of the most unique websites on the Internet in America. Women, no doubt, are getting involved in politics and getting involved in the political process to a greater degree than ever. But now there's a meeting ground of ladies of the right, if you will. And not stereotypical right, 90s women, who might have conservative viewpoints in some areas, but be absolutely free spirits in others. We're very honored and very pleased to have with us today Carolyn Gargaro and Stephanie Herman. They are founders of Right Girl, rightgirl.com. Ladies, good afternoon, and thank you very much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, how are you? Let me get the voices right. Carolyn?
That's me.
All right, and Stephanie?
That's me.
Very good. I'm on your website right now, and I'm on the So What is a Right Girl page. First, if you will, it's relatively new still that ladies are taking as active a role as some are now taking in the discussion of issues that certainly stereotypically in the past would have been taboo for women to be involved in. The old stereotypical image of the woman who cares nothing of politics and nothing of the issues of our times is being blown away, and you're certainly right there in the forefront in the conservative movement in this regard. Why did you decide on putting a website like this together?
Okay, I'll get. Stephanie and I kind of bumped into each other online about 2 years ago, and both of us were a little disappointed to see how many of the stereotypes of conservative women were circulating around the medium, the internet, and both of us decided that it would be beneficial to start a site where women who didn't always necessarily fit people's idea of the stereotypical conservative woman could go to find opinions or to submit their opinion. And both of us, you know, we've felt very much the same, so we just kind of put the website together and it got to, I guess it was still about April 1997 when we actually got it going.
Were there the usual detractors and naysayers who were saying, look, you're wasting your time here. There are not enough women in America who care about these things, and especially enough conservative women who are going to take part in any kind of forum discussion or website?
We haven't really run into people saying that. Of course, we get disagreeing comments about the website, but really no one said that, well, there aren't enough conservative women, you're wasting your time, probably because we have so many people on featured on the website right now that really wouldn't make any sense for someone to say that. Even when we were starting out, no one really, at least I don't remember anybody saying, like, well, this is a waste of time, actually.
No, in fact, we got a lot of really supportive email, especially in the beginning, saying, oh, thank goodness that you've started this because you're really filling a void on the internet.
Now, the void you have filled is a void that, again, is not without its controversy, not without its adversaries. You mentioned that even people who are in disagreement with some of your thoughts visit the email. Do you have to take the heat from those folks? Do they leave you nasty messages and such?
Especially right now, they are. Ever since the Star Report came out, our hate mail has gone up considerably. Usually, the emailers are wanting to discuss either Paula Jones or Linda Tripp, two women that we support on the website.
Let's pick up on that. Here we have two young ladies, admittedly conservative. I don't know if you're a Republican or Democrat, may I ask?
I am Republican.
I'm a Republican, too.
Okay. All right, admittedly Republican. Partisan, or are you looking at this Clinton scandal with an open mind?
Well, I think both of us are trying to look at it with an open mind. Of course, if anybody's going to be partisan one way or the other, I think it's very difficult to say that, you know, you're not biased in any way, shape, or form. When the scandal first started, I tried very hard to keep an open mind and wait for more information to come out. In fact, I even wrote an article to that effect that, as much as it's very easy to want to jump to conclusions, you really have to kind of wait and see what happens. So, of course, we have distinct opinions on it, but we do try to keep an open mind as much as possible, though I'm not sure everyone would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Carolyn, your opinion on Paula Jones. Was she being truthful when she came forward and said, the president came on to me?
When she first came forward, I really didn't know. I didn't know enough about the case. And again, I had to wait for the case to go on a little bit longer. I think now that there is enough evidence definitely to show that she is probably telling the truth. Obviously, that has not been proven in a court of law. But from what I have seen, I would gather that she is telling the truth. My one problem that I've always seen with the case is the hypocrisy of it in mm-hmm. many people's attitudes, which compared to that and their attitudes when Anita Hill came forward.
Ladies, let's hold for about 2 minutes. When we come back, I want to get your thoughts on a possible settlement here that we're hearing talk about. And certainly, Stephanie, get your thoughts on Linda Tripp when we continue here on the Jerry Hughes Program from UVN. WriteGirl.com. Carolyn Gargaro and Stephanie Herman are our guests. They are the founders of a very unique, very informative, and informational website, WriteGirl, WriteGirl.com. Carolyn, you were saying that you do believe now, Paula Jones, that you've had questions when she first came out. We're hearing talk now about a settlement that apparently would exclude any admission of guilt. And in fact, the president's attorneys are suggesting that if there is a settlement, that settlement in and of itself would not be an admission of guilt. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm going to think that if it's settled, that it would be more likely that President Clinton would have been mm-hmm. guilty as charged. A lot of people seem to think that. In fact, I even saw a poll on CNN where most people would believe that if it was settled, that would mean that he was guilty. Of course, I mean, officially, mm-hmm. that's not the case. Officially, if someone settles, it doesn't necessarily mean they're guilty. They just might want to just end the case, and it's not mm-hmm. worth it for them to go on. But that's just my opinion on it. I've gotten a lot of email from people who are saying that they hope she doesn't settle, actually.
The president's testimony before the grand jury that many of us had a chance to see last week, certainly in that testimony, he was very adamant about the point that these folks were just trying to get a settlement, they were just trying to get some money, and that he hadn't done anything, so there was no reason to settle. This settlement talk now that the White House even acknowledges seems to contradict his grand jury testimony.
Yes, but a lot of people are saying different things. I've read about this settlement, and then I know I saw on Sunday morning on one of the talk shows that mm-hmm. Jones lawyers were saying that there really wasn't any talk of a settlement. So I really don't know how accurate that is,
okay.
really. I guess we don't really know a whole lot, except there supposedly is a settlement offer. I'm not sure what's going on past that.
Stephanie Herman, Linda Tripp. Linda Tripp is a lady who has been vilified, probably second only to Ken Starr's vilification. Your thoughts on Linda Tripp?
Well, I think that we can really blame Clinton's own lawyers for the involvement of Linda Tripp in this scandal.
Mm-hmm.
When Michael Isikoff of Newsweek first started poking around on the Kathleen Willey story, Tripp actually tried to warn President Clinton by calling his attorney, Bruce Lindsay, but Lindsay rebuffed her. He totally ignored her, which wasn't, you know, in hindsight, a real smart thing to do. Then, when Isikoff did talk to Linda Tripp and quoted her in his piece, he also quoted Clinton's other attorney, Bob Bennett, who effectively called Linda Tripp a liar. He said she was not to be believed. That comment is what propelled Linda Tripp to tape those conversations with Monica Lewinsky. She wanted to prove that she wasn't a liar, and also she wanted to prove that her version of the Kathleen Willey story, which she did discuss with Monica, was on tape and that she had something to back up her own statement.
Are you concerned now about these allegations of some type of perjury or some type of tampering with these tapes, these allegations now against Linda Tripp?
Well, she has admitted that other people have had access to these tapes,
right.
and that duplications may have been made when they were out of her possession. And there was a story out a couple of weeks ago by Carl Limbacher, who suggested that the likely suspect here is her first attorney, Kirby Baer. Bernard Nussbaum recommended him, and he is a former White House counsel himself with connections to Filegate. Mm-hmm. And it was Baer who was the logical suspect, according to Limbacher, the last time information from Tripp's tapes leaked out. So likely it's not Tripp that was tampering with the tapes. Mm-hmm. It was probably Kirby Baer.
Let me ask each of you the same question, and to the respective discussions that we've had with each, Carolyn to you on Paula Jones and Stephanie to you on Linda Tripp. Knowing what you know now, Stephanie, if you were Linda Tripp, would you have done what Linda Tripp did?
Well,
in the sense of taping and coming forward.
Part of me would say no, simply because I certainly wouldn't want all the flack that she has gotten for what she did.
Mm-hmm.
However, she cites, as a government employee, that one of the reasons that she did it was Executive Order Number 12731 that President Bush signed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the Principles of Ethical Conduct for Government Officers and Employees, saying that employees shall disclose waste, fraud, abuse, and corruption to appropriate authorities. I think if I were Linda Tripp as a federal employee, I would be bound to do that sort of thing.
Carolyn Gargaro, if you were Paula Corbin Jones, knowing what you know now, would you have come forward?
Yes, I would have. I probably would have come forward sooner.
Mm-hmm.
After it happened, though I do not blame her for not coming forward right away, because as she stated, she was very scared that no one would believe her.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, working in a position where you just saw the governor, she's not going to feel, she might feel intimidated to try and come forward and tell somebody. Obviously, in hindsight, it would have been better to tell somebody right away. And if I was her, that is what I would have done. But yes, I would have come forward.
Let me ask each of you another question, and in one or two sentences, a relatively brief answer. And we'll start with Ms. Gargaro there. Your opinion, your thoughts, your feelings toward Hillary Clinton and about Hillary Clinton.
People have been saying that she should leave President Clinton or whatever. I don't think she has an option to do that. I think that she's staying with him, maybe because she is loyal, or because she, what is she supposed to do? You just can't walk out when you're the first lady. So I really don't see her as having any option but to stay and stand by him the way she has.
Stephanie Herman?
Well, I see the first lady as pretty much of a hypocrite. Just basically based on what she has said publicly, and then turns around and acts in an entirely different manner. For example, when she said that she is not the kind of woman who would stand by her man, that is exactly what she's doing.
Do either of you hold or harbor a thought of a quid pro quo here, that there is, as at least one presidential historian has reportedly written, that there is an agreement between Mr. and Mrs. Clinton? In the sense of do what you wish?
I have no idea. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case, but I really don't know. I haven't really even thought about that a whole lot.
Stephanie, have you?
I haven't thought about that too much either. I guess my answer would be I don't really think that that matters, because, again, as we're all saying, it's not about the fact that he cheated on his wife. Certainly no one would want to impeach a president for that.
Right.
It's for the crimes that he committed.
Let's pause here for just a couple of minutes. And when we continue, if we can move into Ken Starr a little bit and his report and the vilification of Ken Starr when we continue. The website, ladies and gentlemen, is RightGirl, RightGirl.com, and we will continue with the founders of that site, two activists in the conservative movement, when we continue here on UBN. And allow me, ladies and gentlemen, to make a correction here. RightGirl, RightGirl.com. RightGirl.com. However, I've tried two browsers spelling RightGirl, and ladies, it does carry you right to the website. So obviously a built-in error correction there in that regard. Ken Starr. Carolyn Gargaro, Ken Starr is obsessed with sex, some people say. They say he is a partisan. They say that he is entering and causing us to enter a sexual McCarthyism atmosphere. Your thoughts?
Ken Starr is not obsessed with sex. That is just merely a tactic to get people to take their mind off the real issue, and it's very easy to do that because the case does involve sex. Mm-hmm. Ken Starr is doing what he is legally supposed to be doing in investigating this case. His jurisdiction was expanded by Janet Reno to investigate this aspect of it. The case involves lying under oath regarding a sexual matter, so the case is going to have sex in it. Him investigating that does not mean he's obsessed with sex. In fact, people complain about all the details in the report, yet he needed to include those sexual details in the report to prove the case about perjury, because it is the president who claimed that he did not lie regarding that, and so he had to back up his point to why he believes the president might have committed perjury on that aspect. He is definitely not in there to get the president, and he's definitely not obsessed with sex.
Stephanie Herman, let me assume a role of devil's advocate here. Now, Stephanie, you know, here we have a guy who has spent $40 million of taxpayers' money, has taken 4 years to release a report that should have been rated triple X. It never should have been released on the Internet without being told it should have come in a brown paper wrapper. And the only thing that he gets out of it, the only thing the American people have gotten here, are allegations that go to a private relationship between the president and a young lady, a private consensual relationship. Ken Starr has wasted our money and wasted our time.
Well, my initial answer to that would be that Bill Clinton could have saved us all quite a bit of that money if he had been honest back in January. We are hoping, we don't know this for sure, but we have heard that there will be more information coming from Starr, and I'm assuming that the bulk of the $40 million that was spent investigating Filegate and Whitewater and all of those will have some more information forthcoming. He's already procured several indictments in those areas, and so the money is number one, not just being spent on Monica, and number two, could have been saved if Clinton would have just cooperated.
But $40 million, Stephanie, I mean, $40 million, think of the good that could have been done with that. I mean, we all know now the president has had an affair, but those aren't high crimes and misdemeanors. It's lies about sex. And you've already said that sex or infidelity is not important in the sense of an investigation or in the sense of an impeachment, certainly. So, I mean, all of these charges are laid at the doorstep of something that's of no importance. Why don't we just forget it, leave this guy alone, let him go about his business of running the country, which is what we gave him a mandate to do.
Well, if President Clinton did commit perjury in the Paula Jones case and before the grand jury, it is irrelevant what the matter was that he perjured himself about.
Mm-hmm. In addition, you were talking about the $40 million and how nothing's been done with it. If you do remember, there was approximately 15 indictments that were given in the Whitewater case. Now, again, it wasn't against President Clinton himself, but it was against his associates. I think that is an important fact. I mean, I don't think that money's wasted. If people did wrongdoings and they were indicted, I think that is quite a big deal, actually.
Ladies, let's pause for just a couple of minutes for our affiliates here. When we continue, we'll pick up on this, especially on this aspect of perjury. And then I'll try to find in the next few minutes here a press release from the Department of Justice regarding a case of perjury. When we continue here on the Jerry Hughes Program from UBN. One-800-TALK-YES is our telephone number, and we're talking to Carolyn Gargaro and Stephanie Herman. They are the founders of Right Girl. RightGirl.com, an internet website for conservative ladies in America, a meeting place to discuss ideas and such. Ladies, on the 18th of April of this year, I believe it was, the Department of Justice issued a press release involving a story which involved a 52-year-old woman. A 52-year-old woman who apparently was a physician or physician's assistant, who was involved in a consensual sex relationship with a patient. And this 52-year-old woman lied under oath about this relationship. The press release said that there had been a plea agreement worked out for obstruction of justice and or perjury. Then we have the situation involving Mark Furman, formerly of the Los Angeles Police Department, who was accused of using the N-word when he had said under oath that he did not. He pled to that nolo contendere and was given a 3-year sentence. Then we have other situations across the country where almost weekly or monthly U.S. attorneys file similar charges to that which have been filed against the president. We have Kelly Flynn in the military, who was drummed out of the service because of her relationship there. Should we apologize to all of these other people? Should we expunge their records and beg their forgiveness if indeed we're going to take this attitude that many of the liberal persuasion and many in the media and many in Congress suggest we should take with the president?
Well, we should not only apologize, but we should change our laws if that's how we're going to handle it from now on. If perjury doesn't matter, suborning perjury, witness tampering, if none of those things are something that we need to keep our president from doing, then I think the rest of us ought to be allowed the same freedom.
Carolyn, your thoughts there?
My thoughts are pretty similar to Stephanie's. I don't really see why. The president, when he took office, vowed to uphold the laws of the United States. If he's going to be allowed to break the laws of the United States, and they should not be laws, which obviously is going to be ridiculous. We shouldn't really throw out perjury laws. But you know, Stephanie had a good point. The fact that if he's allowed to commit perjury, I can't see how the average American citizen can be put in jail for it.
Let me move to another area. If we could broaden our conversation here a little bit. National Organization of Women, NOW. Most people, I think, would suggest that NOW is a leftist organization, left of center anyway. Most people would call them a quote-unquote progressive organization. Why has there not been a woman's counterpart of the conservative ideology?
You mean as far as a women's group?
Yes, uh-huh. Why hasn't there a conservative NOW?
There is one. There is one that's actually is larger than the National Organization for Women. It's Concerned Women for America is a conservative women's group, which is very large.
Well, certainly you will agree with me that they do not get the attention, they do not get the press. In fact,
no, they do not.
Yeah, and some might even argue that, although it's not a women's group specifically, some might even argue that Phyllis Schlafly's organization would take up some of that slack, too. Then perhaps we should alter the question to this respect, or in this respect. Why is it that the conservative women's groups do not get the attention that the National Organization of Women and groups like NOW get?
Well, there is one group, the Independent Women's Forum, out in D.C. That's a conservative women's group. They don't get a lot of press on the nightly news, but they definitely are contacted for their opinions in many of the large newspapers. And whenever a media outlet does contact the IWF, the NOW response is always shock that media outlets would even allow the women of the Independent Women's Forum to speak their opinion.
But again, by and large, if I were to, in a group of people, mixed group, if I were to say the NOW organization, there would be very little hesitancy, very little discussion, very little concern. Most people would know what I'm talking about. But if I were to name any of these other organizations that you have brought forth, folks might say, well, gee, I didn't know they exist, or I don't hear too much about them.
Well, I think that I see your point is that the National Organization for Women is much, probably more well-known.
More vocal.
Right. Well, they are very vocal, and they have done a good job in positioning themselves in the forefront of issues so that if a women's issues comes up, they are at the top of the list for people to contact.
Now, is that because conservative women have taken a back seat, or conservative women have been less, have been more hesitant, I should say, to be vocal?
Go ahead.
One thing that could be is that NOW positions themselves as speaking for all women, and none of the conservative women's groups would even think of doing that.
But the bottom line is, NOW gets the attention. NOW captures the media. NOW was in the living rooms and the boardrooms and the bedrooms of the American homes and businesses, and the other organizations aren't. Is that a failure on the part of conservative women's groups or conservative women in general?
Well, I think it might be. I'm not sure of when the other groups started in relation to NOW. I think NOW was one of the first groups. If I'm incorrect, please correct me. So they were there first, and again, they were very vocal and very active. In addition, on the whole, a lot of the media tends to be a little bit more liberal than conservative. I would say the mainstream media, and so they're probably going to naturally migrate towards a more liberal women's group. And again, if they've been the women's group have been around a long time and are very vocal, they're going to naturally go towards them. Whether that's saying that the conservative women haven't spoken up enough, that might be so in some respects, which is one reason we created our website.
But Stephanie, let me suggest that you and Carolyn are on the cutting edge, that you and Carolyn are out on the front line, and that, in my humble opinion, submitted respectfully, that most conservative women are still somewhat tied or handcuffed to that old stereotypical image that we have of the nice little wife and the nice little homemaker and mother who is hesitant to speak out on political issues because that's something the husband takes care of. He tells her who and what to vote for.
Well, and we're obviously trying to break that stereotype. I am a married mother of one. I stay at home to raise my son. And it's actually that got me interested in politics 6 or 7 years ago, because I noticed that groups like Now were heavily critical of women like me. And so as I met more stay-at-home moms on the Internet, and we started talking about what is important to us, we realized that it definitely did involve politics, that our opinions did matter in the political arena. And so I think you'll start to hear from more of us as time goes on.
Why do you think we have seen less conservative women in politics than liberal women in politics? For instance, I would submit that we do not have a conservative woman senator. And by comparison, we have few conservative women congresspersons rather than liberal women congresspersons.
Are you asking me or Kim?
Yeah, let's start with you, if we could, Stephanie.
Well, I think that's mainly because Now started back in the 70s, and they started supporting liberal female candidates.
But those candidates had to evolve. I mean, they had to. Now did not create the candidate, did they?
No, but they certainly gave exposure to the candidates that came forward.
Mm-hmm.
Female candidates that were conservative in the 70s really didn't have an outlet, at least an outlet that promoted women exclusively. That's coming about more now. But especially if candidates, and this has been true since the 70s, if they're pro-choice, which many conservative female candidates aren't, they get a lot of backing from groups like Now and the List groups that support these candidates.
Carolyn, your thoughts there?
Well, I kind of agree with what Stephanie said. In fact, it isn't just really conservative women that you would say aren't really endorsed by Now. I would gather that let's say I was running for office and I was a liberal Democrat, yet I was not pro-choice, I don't think that Now would back me. They seem to be more interested, at least from what I have seen, in backing women who are running for office who are pro-choice.
Can a feminist be pro-life?
I'm sorry?
Can a feminist be pro-life?
Yes, she can be.
Can a liberal be pro-life?
Yes, they definitely can be. I know a lot of them.
But the media would tell us that that's a no-no, that it doesn't exist.
A lot of the times they do. Every time you hear the term pro-life or anti-abortion, it seems to be linked to some kind of radical right-wing person. I have met a great deal of very liberal people who are pro-life, and in fact, they're quote, liberal ideas are why they're pro-life, because they are very much into human rights and speaking up for the oppressed, and they see abortion as one of the greatest oppressions of somebody. And so that is why they're pro-life.
Let's pause on that point and pick up on that point when we continue, and also if we might set up the next segment. The barriers of conservatism and liberalism in your mind, so we can discuss when we continue. The barriers, not in ideology, but barriers of conservatism and liberalism based on race. When we continue on the Jerry Hughes Program from UBN. Carolyn Gargaro and Stephanie Herman are our guests. They are the founders of the internet website RightGirl.com. Conservative ladies who have if you will, a website of information and exchange of ideas and opinions, not only of conservatives, but liberals who visit the site also. The aspect of the media telling us primarily, as we were talking there, Carolyn Gagaro, that that feminists and the liberals cannot be these things that are taboo, by and large, to the liberal persuasion, and that would be pro-life, and that would be strong family value type thing. But let me pick up on something here that seems to be also a somewhat of a problem, and any thought that you might have on how it can be or will be resolved. We're beginning to see the wall slowly crumble between Caucasian American and African American on conservatism and liberalism, Democrat and Republican. J.C. Watts is a perfect example there. But I would submit that while that barrier has been there for a long time among men, it is there to a greater extent among African American women. In fact, I don't know at this point, and maybe you can help me out here, of any national figure, household word, household name, that we could point to as an African American woman who would be of traditional conservative philosophy. Can you?
On the top of my head, somebody that probably isn't a household name. No, I one person does come to mind, mm-hmm. who is an African American woman who is conservative leaning, and that is Star Parker. But like that isn't necessarily a household name, I don't
right.
think.
Why is that? What do you think? Is that just traditional? I mean, down through the years, this has simply been the way that politics have been taught.
Well, I think that a lot of people may see the conservative side as being. Mm-hmm. Maybe even racist. I've had people say that if you're conservative, you are racist and you hate all other races, which is kind of ridiculous. But I think that stereotype does persist, and people seem to think that if mm-hmm. being right-leaning or conservative mm-hmm. means that you are not at all for any type of ethnic diversity, mm-hmm. which is untrue. And I think that the conservative side needs to make that a little bit more clear. I don't think that's been made clear enough. I don't think enough... Mm-hmm. People have focused on that to say that really your political leanings doesn't mm-hmm. really isn't, you know, have anything to do with race.
Stephanie Herman, and yet at the same time I have seen polls that tend to indicate that a very solid conservative philosophy, and that is pro-life now, is held to a greater degree, pro-life is held to a greater degree, among minority communities and among minority races than even among Caucasian Americans. So in that regard, if those surveys are true, here is a solid foundational conservative thought that is held, but other conservative thoughts are not necessarily there along with it.
Well, and I think probably the reason for that is that we do view blacks as being traditionally Democrat on the left, and I believe that that's because blacks have been discriminated against as a group for their collective identity. And the left is that the as far as on the political spectrum, they are definitely on the socialist end, the collective end of the political spectrum. So when blacks seek to address their discrimination, they do it collectively because that's how they have been approached. And unfortunately, as a collective, as a group, they are the open arms are more from the Democrats on that level.
I'm going to name five ladies: Geraldine Ferraro, Pat Schroeder, Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, and even Marcy Kaptur. Those five ladies at one time or another have been mentioned, and in the case of Geraldine Ferraro, in fact, has been a candidate for major executive office. We're talking now vice president or even presidential. Can you name me five conservative women whose names have been mentioned? Either of you?
Probably not five.
Elizabeth
Dole would be one.
I knew Elizabeth Dole was going to be the first. Who's second? Why? I go back to my original. I'm having trouble with this. Why conservative women are not in the forefront, are not as vocal, are not as seen, are not as heard as liberal women?
We're thinking about that.
Well, the answer could be that you had your baby boomers getting involved politically in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And liberal baby boomers were traditionally your most unhappy baby boomers. They had the most to complain about, while your conservative women were just busy doing their jobs, raising their families, and they didn't have as much to say.
So back to my original premise, and I hate to put it this way, and I don't mean it demeaning, conservative women have been slower to develop politically than liberal women.
That might not necessarily, I see what you're saying, that could, from what's been, what you see in the political area, that could be what's, how things seem. I think on the whole, I think women may, I'm just guessing, judging by voting patterns, may be a little more, bit more liberal on the whole, which is why we see more liberal women go into politics.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to wrap up the loose ends here, and in each of you, I'd like your thoughts and comments. Where are we going? Where are the women going? Where do you see conservative women 10 years from now, 20 years from now? And where are we going as a nation? When we continue, rightgirl.com is the website address. We will continue on UBN. One-800-TALK-YES. Ladies, let's go quickly to a cell phone caller out of West Plains, Missouri, KWPN. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hello, Jerry.
How are you, sir?
Oh, just fine. Excellent show today.
Thank you, sir.
I had a little bit of a disagreement with the point you were making to your young ladies there. That was, I can agree with what you're saying about the fact that you never hear of conservative women, but I don't think that means they're not out there. I think that means that the basic news media just isn't that sympathetic to them. And I kept thinking, as you were talking, of my own congresswoman, Joanne Emerson, who is very conservative, and yet you never hear about her on the national news.
But let me suggest, Chris, even if you look at the conservative news programs, if you listen to other conservative talk radio programs, you will not hear the number of women leaders, conservative women leaders, that you would hear on a counter program of liberal women leaders. The numbers simply aren't there. It doesn't seem.
It doesn't seem, but I'm saying that there may be a difference between perception and reality.
Could very well be.
You know, as far as the perception goes, I'm thinking of two things from past experience. I spent about 10 years servicing equipment at TV stations, and I know you could go into any of the parking lots of these TV stations in a major city, and you could just about spot the news people's cars by all of the bumper stickers for the most leftist liberal candidate that's running. The other thing that I'm remembering is during the last, two presidential campaigns back, there was absolutely nothing heard about the Libertarian candidate
when
it came time for the for the Ross Perot, George Bush, and Bill Clinton debates, even though that candidate had been run off from the studio where the debates were held because he showed up for a previously scheduled appointment, wasn't allowed on site, and the grounds for denying him the chance to get the coverage was he wasn't a viable candidate. Well, why isn't he a viable candidate? Because he doesn't have the coverage.
Mm-hmm.
But why don't we give him the coverage? Because he's not viable.
It's Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Chris? Yeah, it's a circular reasoning, but what this results in is the press gives the publicity to their own and to the people that are most sympathetic with the with basically the editors who are in charge. And those are children of the 60s today.
Chris, a point very well made indeed, sir. Thank you very much. And I apologize, ladies, but we only have about 25 seconds for each of you. Where are we going and where are conservative women going to be 10, 15 years from now?
I hope they're in the White House, actually. But if we have candidates like Elizabeth Dole, I do really think that's actually possible.
Okay.
And I think women of Generation X are more conservative than the women of the baby boomers, and we may see more of them as conservative candidates 10 to 15 years from now.
Stephanie Herman, is Bill Clinton out?
I can't predict that one.
Carolyn?
He's a little too slippery.
Carolyn, how about you?
I don't know. One day it seems like he might be, then the next day he comes out and he looks like he'll be in the White House till the very end, so I really don't know.
Ladies, we thank you very, very much for taking time from your day to be with us, and I do hope you'll come back and visit with us again.
We'd be glad to.
Thank you very much. God bless. Carolyn Gargaro, ladies and gentlemen, and Stephanie Herman, excuse me, their site is RightGirl, RightGirl, RightGirl.com, RightGirl, RightGirl.com. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for allowing us to share these hours with you. And our thanks to those great affiliate stations. God bless each and every one of you for allowing us on your fine broadcast facilities. Rockin' Robin, thank you, ma'am. And Alan, thank you, sir. I'm Jerry Hughes for the United Broadcasting Network. God save the Republic of the United States of America.